You are listening to Kubernetes Bytes, a podcast bringing you the latest from the world of cloud-native data management. My name is Ryan Wallner, and I'm joined by Bhavin Shah, coming to you from Boston, Massachusetts. We'll be sharing our thoughts on recent cloud-native news and talking to industry experts about their experiences and challenges managing the wealth of data in today's cloud-native ecosystem.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are. We're coming to you from Boston, Massachusetts. Today is March 30th, 2022. Hope everyone is doing well and staying safe. Let's dive into it. Bhavin, how have you been? We're almost to April and hopefully some warmer weather. What have you been up to?
First quarter is coming to an end. I don't know. I need to do some personal evaluations. So, you know this, we bought a house this past month, and that's what our whole quarter was about, like just going to open houses, going through the closing process and just wrapping that up. So now I guess we need to plan better. This is me and my wife, we need to plan better on what else we are doing for the next year or something like that, or next quarter at least. And in addition to that, I am looking into building like a completely new or using one of those raised garden bed DIY kits.
Nice.
I'll see what option I choose. I was going to buy the DIY kit, which comes with everything you need, but it is expensive than just buying wood and figuring it out on your own.
Yep.
So I guess that's how I'll be spending my weekend, trying to just see what I can do. How about you?
A garden is super nice. We usually do a raised garden out the side of my house. We grew peppers last year, green peppers. They came out really good. Tons of tomatoes. And we don't have a full up right on the ground garden. Mm-hmm. I'd love to have that, but my property is just like a hill basically. it would be kind of a pain to do it on the ground, but we make do and it's always a good time. Nice. I just mostly had a pretty relaxing weekend. Had some family up. It's always nice to see family. So just a pretty chill weekend. Visited a new brewery here.
Oh, nice.
That
Which
just
one?
Opened in near, it's called Rushford and Sons.
Okay.
In Upton. It's a kind of a new one. I want to say within this past year, but they had Cousins Maine lobster truck there. So I got myself a nice Connecticut style lobster roll, which is fantastic. So I had a pretty good weekend, all things considered.
Nice. Outside, I guess that's the spring and summer goal, right?
Yeah, exactly. Be outside. It was still kind of cold, but we made it work. I'm hoping for some warm weather around the corner.
Yep.
Cool. Well, we have a really cool topic today. For those who are kind of paying attention to the Kubernetes ecosystem, we're going to talk about eBPF, and we have an awesome guest to come on the show who is going to chat with us about what eBPF is, and we'll introduce him in just a minute. But before that, we want to dive into this week's news. So, Bhavin, why don't you start us off?
Sure. So this week, Red Hat came out with the OpenShift 4.10 release. So it had a bunch of new features, but the two that I wanted to highlight were OpenShift sandbox containers, which were in tech preview or early access for the past couple of releases, are now GA. So they are basically based on Kata containers project and provide an additional layer of security or isolation, so that defense in depth. So you can run your workloads that have a stringent security requirement, or if you want to run some third-party or untrusted workloads, you can run them as part of a sandbox environment and reduce the blast radius. So that was pretty interesting. And then the second thing or feature that I wanted to highlight from 4.10 was support for ARM processors. So now customers can use OpenShift on the couple of systems they list are AWS EC2 A1 instances, and any RHEL supported bare metal platforms that meet the ARM specification. So it should be good. They open up a few edge use cases or few additional use cases, people who have been using ARM for their infrastructure and were looking for OpenShift support, now they have it generally available. Next on my list was just the NSA Kubernetes hardening guide report. I know we did discuss about this somewhere last year in the October, November timeframe. That was version one. NSA did update it based on some feedback from the community, added some more best practices. I clicked on the link. I didn't read it completely. It is a 66 page long report, but it does dive into some of the more obvious things, things like you should scan for vulnerabilities often on your containers and your images. You should always use least privilege for all your workloads, use network separation, authentication, authorization, and stuff like that. But again, it's a good read. Helps me reinforce the fact that Kubernetes is being adopted by not just the leading edge companies or companies that are working on the bleeding edge, but also now a wider range of organizations and customers are adopting it as part of their production environments. So that was good. The third one was, like, I like to talk about acquisitions and funding rounds. We did have a new funding round from a company called SpectroCloud. They raised $40 million in Series B to accelerate growth and community of their Kubernetes management platform and product development. So SpectroCloud, again, I don't have much experience with them, but they have like a full stack solution that can be deployed anywhere. So specifically with this new round of funding, they're looking at edge environments where customers can just buy this whole end-to-end stack. As soon as they power it up, it will connect back to their SaaS management portal, something called Palette. And from the Palette interface, you can manage these different edge locations. So let's see, like, this is just Series B. So we'll see how they go on and raise future funding round valuations, as we have seen not many startups go public this year based on the current financial conditions, but it should be interesting startup to watch.
Cool. Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I think that's it for the list of things that I wanted to talk about.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I only had a few things for this week. The first one I want to talk about is, I'm always a fan of sort of introductory material, basic tutorials and things like that. There's a great article from this week's Cube Weekly, which targets sort of what are Kubernetes persistent volumes, what are PVCs, and specifically how to troubleshoot through these basic kind of scenarios and some basic troubleshooting tips that you can use, which I thought was a nice addition to a lot of the introductory level 101 content we see about, you know, we've talked about what persistent value claims are, what provisioning and binding and reclaim policies are, and how to use them with certain objects like deployments. But this one goes into some detail about sort of common errors that you might see, right? So common issues that you might see mounting volumes or accessing volumes, and maybe some of the specific errors such as failed attached volume or failed mount errors that we've on the storage space probably know pretty well from Kubernetes storage.
Burned by those quite often.
Yeah, exactly. And it goes through some of the common causes and where you can look to kind of go and diagnose the problem and if you're in crash loop back off and things like that. So a really cool article anyway. We'll put that in the show notes. The next one was a bit of a shameless plug on co-located events. We mentioned it last time. There is a Kubernetes workshop that will be hosted by yours truly and my colleague Tim at KubeCon Valencia this year. So that will be Tuesday, May 17th. At KubeCon EU, which is the day before the event kicks off. And this is a Kubernetes data workshop. So if you like kind of what we've been talking about on this show, we're really going to tackle a lot of the same problems around introducing sort of how to use stateful applications, how you can do that on Kubernetes. We'll have some live labs, we'll have some educational materials, some food. It'll be good, a fun time, and some presentations at the end of the day. So we will put the link to sign up and learn more about that as well.
Having gotten a sneak peek at the agenda, I really feel that this session will be valuable for people that are looking to get started, because this does have that hands-on component. So you're not just sitting there for a few hours listening to presentations and looking at demos. This is you actually doing stuff. So make sure if you register for it, get a laptop and you'll have some hands-on time.
Yeah, get a laptop or bring a laptop. Hopefully you already have one. Oh, you don't have to get one, but you can bring yours. Just bring your own L, bring your own laptop kind of workshop. So yeah, we'll do everything through web browser, kind of through some labs. So the last thing I had on here was news from Ondat, who teamed up with SUSE to do some things around security. We hear more and more about security all the time. So this announcement is actually more around how to work with secrets and how to securely work with secrets and how to not just use the defaults in Kubernetes, but how to do that with SUSE and a project called Trousseau, which I think I'm saying that right, but uses the Kubernetes KMS sort of project, which allows Kubernetes to interact with a whole bunch of key management systems. And so this project is kind of just really around, you know, how to work with secrets, how to do it securely, make sure things are encrypted, things are just not stored in plain text. You know, everyone can decode Base64. If you didn't know that, that's the default. So definitely want to look into these security-based topics. We'll put a link to that that announcement as well. And I think that's what we had for news. So let's dive into eBPF 101. Yep. Our guest today is Matt Leonard, co-founder and CTO of ContainIQ. He was a speaker at 2021 eBPF Summit and is super passionate about DevOps, Kubernetes, and anything involving the Linux kernel, which you'll learn most of what we're going to talk about is about eBPF and its interaction with the kernel. And do you actually remember what it stands for? Because I don't even think...
I think it's Extended Berkeley Packet Filter.
You are right. Yeah, I just Googled it while we were doing that. So in case you're wondering, that's what we're going to talk about today. Really interesting stuff. And without further ado, let's get Matt on the show.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies, count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Matt, it's great to have you on the show. Welcome to Kubernetes Bytes. We're excited to talk to you about eBPF today. But before we dive into that, tell us about yourself and kind of what you do.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm super excited for sure. But yeah, I'm Matt. I'm the co-founder and CTO of ContainIQ, a Kubernetes native monitoring and tracing platform that leverages eBPFs to provide APM-like metrics instantly. Overall, just super passionate about DevOps, Kubernetes, and anything involving the Linux kernel.
Great. Yeah, I will admittedly tell you that I knew nothing about eBPF until we started to talk about this show. And then I dove into a couple of videos and really learned at a very basic level what it is all about. And I'm only scratching the surface, I'm sure. So why don't you tell us and the listeners, what is eBPF and why do we need it?
Yeah, so full disclosure, I only got really into it about a year ago as well, so not that far behind me. Yeah, so it's definitely like relatively new. It's been around for a while, but I feel like the kernel support has just gotten to a good enough point where people are really kind of pushing the bounds with what's possible. But at a high level, it basically allows you to hook into either Linux system calls or adding U-probes to pre-built binaries to directly hook into those function calls and kind of like a programming interface on top of that. So you can do some pretty fascinating things. And I think you've kind of seen this explosion of tooling around eBPF. Mm-hmm. And it's always really cool to see what people are building with it now.
Yeah, I know that one of the things that we're doing at this coming KubeCon as a day zero event. And I think I saw a whole community event at ABPF, which maybe we could talk about a little bit later, but I think I might have to show up just because it's I'm starting to learn more about this. So, you know, since ABPF is sort of tied to the kernel and the system calls, what's the difference between existing tooling that's out there and something like ABPF?
Yeah, that's a great question. So say, for example, I think like a good comparison is something like Perf or maybe like some of the existing tracing tools. Mm-hmm. What I've kind of seen in production environments is that eBPF is often more performant. The reason for that being it runs in like a VM inside of the kernel. So you've got, there's specific use cases where people are building tools that you generally wouldn't run in production now. Because of like some of the performance gains. I also mm-hmm. think like kind of the entire programming interface that's built on top of it allows you to do things that, you know, weren't really possible before. So you're seeing like entire applications built around like this new set of tooling. And some of like the, I guess like functionality is more fleshed out. I think the possibilities are definitely greater with eBPF. And like I said, there's some super fascinating things being built with it right now.
Gotcha. So like, I think when you introduced yourself, you said ContainIQ is built using eBPF. What are like outside the monitoring ecosystem, what other use cases are there or what are the other vendors doing with eBPF today?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of use cases you see in like general observability with like other tools like Pixie. But I think there's some even more interesting applications and things like security. So like a great example of that is Falco. And what they do is they're basically listening to all of the system calls that mm-hmm. happen like within your cluster by adding kprobes to them and then providing you kind of like high level security information based on their security call or their system calls. A great example of this is like they're able to detect crypto miners, which has been like a kind of a, something surprising I've heard recently is people, even employees running crypto miners within their company's clusters. And so, yeah, not great. And getting away with it too. And so something like Falco can do is it can kind of listen to listen in on these different system calls mm-hmm. and, find processes that shouldn't be making them or things that look out of the ordinary. And giving you the ability to kind of like either restrict those things or alert on them or, you know, identify when things are happening that shouldn't.
Gotcha. Got it. Yeah. I actually remember when I was working for a healthcare company, we used to test out Mesos a lot before we dove into actually running it as our platform. But we used to put it up on the internet a bunch. And if you just left it there for long enough in a single day, you get miners just popping up on your Mesos clusters. And it was, it's a common problem, but it's an interesting solution to it with eBPF, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think we see a lot of people who are using Kubernetes to spin up like environments for mm-hmm. their users. So they're spinning like up a pod that gives each user like maybe a development environment, right? And so what's the first thing people try to do? They try to spin these up, launch a crypto miner on it and, you know, make some money off the company, I guess. And so, yeah, tools like Falco can kind of like hook into those calls and help you catch those things basically.
Got it.
Interesting. And so I guess one thing for our audience, right? Like the reason eBPF is able to do all of this is because it runs on the kernel. So it can monitor all of these system calls and processes that any of the container that are running on the host can like submits, right? So it can basically be that one single layer where you can have this intelligence built in and it can monitor traffic and like perform all of these actions for you.
Exactly. So since you're like cooking those system calls, you can really do anything. You can dump the arguments to it. You can dump the return arguments. You can do a ton of analysis on everything that's happening. Mm-hmm. I guess that leads me into like some of you can like downsides as well, though, is that you do have to run the container that's using this as root or as privileged. Mm-hmm. Some of the newer kernel versions have capabilities for BPF, but if you're not, I think it's like 5.7 and up. But yeah, if you're running anything earlier, you need like sysadmin with a privileged container. So you're definitely giving a lot of capabilities to the container that's, you know, running these BPF based programs.
Gotcha. And so in addition to like the vendors, right, you spoke about Falco and ContainIQ. How are like customers adopting eBPF? Do they even care about the kernel level or they just rely on these vendors to offer a security or an observability solution and then they don't care about the implementation details?
I think it sort of depends, but in my experience, most people don't really care that you're using eBPF. They just want, information in either an easier way or with like in Falco's case, like a way that maybe wasn't possible before. So like a great use case, I think, in regards to like Kubernetes is like you can hook all of these like system calls, right? Mm-hmm. Or like with what we're doing, we're adding a BPF program to the traffic controller. And so from this, we can parse all of your network traffic out, right? That people don't really care about that. Mm-hmm. What's interesting to them is that we can then take that network traffic, associate it with like an IP address, and then show you all of the traffic in and out of like a given pod based on like the protocol, right? Yeah. And so I guess like what a lot of the use cases you see with BPF are is like it's a faster time to value in some instances because you don't have to install an APM. You don't have to kind of configure like application layer like tracing or something. Mm-hmm. It's possible to do it with BPF at the kernel layer and then use Kubernetes to attach the, you know, metadata about the application later on.
Gotcha. And I think one of the demos that I saw getting ready for this episode, right, where instead of creating individual sidecar containers for each of your pods, you can have the functionality that you just mentioned as part of the eBPF program running on the host. And that way you don't have to modify your applications, but still get all of that functionality that you need.
Exactly. So like that being like kind of a faster time to value, something you've seen with like Cilium, where like you don't need to, you know, proxy the requests in every single container or pod with like a sidecar container. You can just install a daemon set on the host that's looking at every open socket and making kind of like the routing decisions based on that, or just exporting the network traffic somewhere else for, you know, later analysis.
Got it. Now, eBPF is deployed in the same way other applications are then, since it's a daemon set, like you mentioned, if it's deployed on Kubernetes, I'm assuming it can be deployed as sort of like any other application that would be deployed as a daemon set. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's how you typically see it deployed. So generally, it's going to be a daemon set where you have to like mount the sys folder. And then you're gonna have to run the container as privileged. Depending on if you're using like something like BCC tools, which is just a framework for, you know, building BPF applications, you'll also have to download and install the kernel headers, which can be annoying because they're, you know, dependent on the specific kernel version you're running. So there's a little bit of like figuring out the kernel version and then installing the kernel headers based on that. So it's a little bit of extra work. I think what I've seen is kubectl trace does this great. They have like an init container that runs and basically says like, okay, what's your kernel version?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get the kernel headers for that kernel version. Let's set up the mounts. We're going to configure everything for you so that like it just kind of works.
Oh, nice. Okay. Need to try that out. I didn't even know this such a thing existed. So this is helpful.
Yeah. They definitely would check out kubectl trace. It's a super cool and it's an easy way to kind of get started with kind of like eBPF because it basically leverages BPF trace and lets you run these different kind of like BPF trace functions on, you know, different pods in your cluster.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Now you mentioned, you know, eBPF is sort of a way for you to take an existing system. And this is, I think I see a lot of value in the sense that if you have an organization that's already running a whole bunch of applications and they want some level of, you know, security, observability, right? Dropping in eBPF seems like a really good way to say, hey, you know, every application doesn't need a code change, or, you know, every application doesn't need a, you know, another container. That's actually super valuable. I see that as a huge win. But where do you see eBPF sort of taking on the future? Like what's it targeting for the future? Where do you think it's going to really hold its own? Obviously security being a huge part of this, I think, but maybe some others that you can talk to.
Yeah. So one of the coolest projects I've seen, it's actually built by a friend of mine, Sebastiano. It's called the Morpheus compiler. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it basically analyzes your network traffic in real time, and then provides like compiler optimization to basically improve network throughput. So it's kind of like this continuous compiler that's looking at like real time, you know, network traffic and making decisions based on that. So mm-hmm. in like the benchmarks they've done, there's like been, you know, some really large improvements on things like latency, like I said, like network throughput. And so I think you're going to see maybe people rewriting some of the existing kind of like general networking tools out there using BPF. And I think there's, you know, there's a lot of really cool things that are going to be done here, that's for sure.
Got it. Now, in the networking space, and since we're talking about Kubernetes, is there sort of a path to, you know, helping the idea of, you know, multi-tenancy, understanding, you know, shared platforms, or, you know, platform as a service vendors? Can they use it to sort of help identify maybe, you know, how much network is one tenant over another kind of using, in the sense that I see shops kind of do things a couple of ways. It's like every team or part of an application gets their own Kubernetes cluster and they can just do whatever they want. Or there's this like big Kubernetes cluster shared with multiple tenants. And I think we see this coming up more and more often. So I'm curious about, you know, any intersection here.
Yeah, I think, the possibilities are kind of endless, because you can, like I said, you can hook into anything, but it's definitely possible, because, you know, Kubernetes provides like the metadata for you to associate these things with like whoever the corresponding team or like, I guess, like application responsible for that network traffic is. So yeah, I think kind of leveraging, you know, BPF to intercept the traffic and then Kubernetes to kind of layer on the metadata on top of that, you can get like pretty granular insights into, you know, what traffic belongs where, and like who's responsible for it, which applications. Even if you just have like multiple teams and like you want to see your network traffic per team, like you could do something like that pretty easily.
Nice. And like, I think in my previous jobs, I've worked with tools that do this at the virtual machine level. So like analyze, because they only have a one NIC, or in most cases, analyze how the traffic is going between them and understand your like communication inside your own data center. And then like the next step was to enforce certain rules. Do you see this eBPF taking as the next step, like also help with enforcement? Like, okay, if it's helping you through metadata and through packet analysis, figure out what component or what pod is talking to a different pod. Can you enforce certain rules and implement those network policies to stop certain traffic in real time?
Yeah, so the Cilium actually does something pretty similar to this, I'm sure, where I think at least, where you can look at kind of like the connections between pods and reject them based on data. I don't know if it's out on payload yet, but yeah, that's all definitely possible. And there's even specific BPF functions right now being, I think they're like 5.4 up. I think it's verdict, I believe, BPF verdict, but where you can basically say whether to drop the packet or not. So you can basically look at the, you know, incoming metadata of the request and say like, okay, good, pass, or like, no, drop it. So yeah, I think that's definitely something we're going to see more of in the future, and kind of probably Cilium even built on their, building on top of like their current implementation to allow more complex analysis of the like packets and decision-making on top of that. Like I said, a lot of this is like only available in sometimes newer kernels. So it's some of it's like just playing a catch-up game and waiting for older environments to catch up with what's possible.
Yeah, it's actually talking about Cilium. It's actually reminding me, I used to work a lot on sort of software defined networking and open flow networks and the things you could do in sort of inside the switch for programming the network, right? Being able to identify packets and do some kind of network function. It's reminding me a lot of that, but obviously at sort of the Linux and kernel level now. So it's really, really quite interesting. Now, you mentioned before that, having to run eBPF itself on the host as root is sort of a downside. Now, is there any other, gotchas when getting introducing yourself to eBPF and what it can do?
Yeah, so I think if you're not careful, you can add a lot of overhead. So it's definitely something you should be measuring and keeping track of and just like staying aware. It can be dependent on vary wildly between different hosts and kernel versions and, the amount of network throughput. So you definitely want to stay aware of the performance. Mm-hmm. If you're installing the kernel headers, that's obviously going to take up disk space. So again, something you want to stay on top of. If you're using something like BCC tools, which is, like I said, it's just a framework for building out BPF programs. You're going to have to add a compiler to your the container you're distributing. So larger container size. Differences between kernels can be annoying if you're relying on certain kernel structs. Mm-hmm. And the verifier likes to yell at you a lot. So there's a lot of times where and we see this all the time, where it'll work on certain kernel versions and others, the verifier was slightly different in that version. And so we're slightly tweaking our, checks, our if statements to please the verifier. So yeah, there can be just a lot of fiddling around to get everything to work perfectly, I guess.
God, it makes sense. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that at first came to mind when you're you can run sort of a function based on a Linux kernel call. Well, that program, I imagine, is very important, like you said, to keep in mind of how much work it's actually doing, right? Because, if it's stuck in an infinite loop or it's not getting the right condition, or if you're trying to do too much within there, I imagine, like you said, it can affect the performance. So I'm wondering if there's any, best practices around using it that you can share.
Yeah, so I think for us at least, I kind of just test. I mean, I'm sure a lot of engineers say that, but you kind of just have to, throw it in a somewhat realistic environment, push a lot of whatever type of operation you're hooking into. So maybe you're doing network analysis, pushing a lot of data through it, making sure everything kind of works as you're expecting. If you're using a newer kernel, you can leverage some of the new BPF-based capabilities. It's CAP-BPF, so that you don't have to run a sysadmin. So you can lower your security posture, even kind of just a little bit. I'll also say on newer kernels, there's BPF type format and the kind of compile once run anywhere or everywhere, which will allow you basically to not have to worry about changes in structs as much. So if you're running a newer kernel, I think that's definitely something you should be taking advantage of. Maybe leveraging libbpf over something like BCC just because of the smaller footprint and container. But I think in general, a lot of it kind of depends on the kernel version you're running, right? And using as much of the kind of support you can get from that kernel version.
Gotcha. So all of this is great and people are empowered to do whatever they want, but just honest opinion, should end customers or end users try to mess with eBPF programs or just leave it to the vendors and have them scrape all kind of information that's needed rather than trying to do this all on their own?
I don't know. I find it fascinating. So I think everyone should kind of play around with it. It's definitely a cool learning experience. And
yeah.
There's a suite of tools out there you can get started with really easy. Like I said, check out kubectl trace. They let you run super simple or straightforward BPF trace functions, or like BCC tools, which again is just they have a ton of Python scripts to get you started with, where you can do things like track TCP connections, or look at function latencies in your Python program. So I definitely think it's worth people kind of playing around with and kind of seeing what's possible. And it's, like I said, for me, it's fun. Like, I kind of enjoy that kind of like.
And we'll make sure we include a link to all of these tools that you mentioned in the show notes so people can check them out later.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I imagine that, you know, the vendors that produce sort of products with eBPF, right, ContainIQ, there's also a slew of other products that might be able to use it, right? Just we talk about storage and a lot of storage vendors in the Kubernetes space. I imagine they might even have their own use cases for it. So definitely a super interesting technology. I do want to make sure we hit on, like Bhavin said, anything you want to include where people can get started. I don't know if you can share anything about the KubeCon EU and Valencia Day Zero event, but we will definitely make sure to link to that as well.
Yeah, so I'll definitely share, I think, some tools. I'll start with that people should check out that I think are really cool and can kind of help them get started with, you know, hacking away with BPF. And that's kubectl trace, BCC tools, libbpf, if you want kind of like a little bit less straightforward, but less overhead way to develop BPF programs. Again, the Morpheus compiler, I think if you're looking at, you know, what's possible with BPF, I think that's one of the coolest projects out there. And there's a great research paper as well that goes along it, kind of explaining how it all works, that I think is super interesting and people should check out. There's also, the first day of the, or day zero, I guess, of KubeCon is always like eBPF day. So I'm sure there's going to be some great talks there. And there's an eBPF summit as well people should look into. I think August of last year, so probably around the same time this year, if I'm guessing.
Gotcha.
Nice. Yeah. There's 2 days of day zeros now. I don't know. I've been contemplating what to actually call that, whether it's day zero, day 0.5. Normally in KubeCons, there's 1 day zero and then the event starts. But yeah, in Valencia, there are 2 day zeros. This, I think, is 16th and 17th. So we'll definitely check that out. I'll be there as well as my colleague Tim. So I'll definitely come by and check it out. I guess with that, you know, we'll make sure and include all those, but, Matt, I think I've learned a lot and have a lot more to learn about eBPF. I'm definitely going to go check it out. It's been a pleasure having you on the show, and I hope our listeners get a lot out of this, just like we did.
Yeah, I had a great time kind of like talking to you guys about this. I still have a lot to learn too. So I'll be reading those things right with you.
Sounds good. Take care. All right. Well, that was a good conversation. I know that, you know, eBPF is definitely a little outside the norm for what we talk about. And I actually like that, right? Getting ready for the show, I know I asked you if I was interpreting eBPF correctly and what it does. And I actually find it super interesting. We don't work with the kernel much in our day jobs. So really interesting to see how eBPF is used. And I know I've seen this term come up more and more in the Kubernetes community, and I haven't really dove into it. So this was a really cool conversation to have. And I don't know, what did you really learn from it?
This was one of those episodes where I was trying to make sure that I sound as a person who understands the basics, but yeah, really we needed an expert, and Matt did a great job of talking about eBPF and why it's needed. One of my key takeaways was just since it's runs in the kernel, it can deliver that better performance. It can optimize the way your applications are built. And a couple of interesting use cases were around observability and security, and how running these eBPF programs on your host inside the kernel can help you do packet filtering, can help you implement certain security rules, can help you block traffic even. So vendors like Falco or Cilium have already been doing such great work that even if you learned like a few things from this podcast, definitely personally, I will go and check those out and look at additional demos. But that was like one key takeaway, like, okay, this eBPF, even though it's a buzzword, it's increasing in terms of adoption. It's increasing in terms of number of vendors that are using it to implement or build their products. And it definitely has like a good trajectory or adoption trajectory ahead of it. How about you?
Absolutely. I think the big thing that really caught my attention was, you know, not having to really change a lot of what existing applications, application code or sidecars are really doing already today. Mm-hmm. You know, we've actually dove into a few different projects that, you know, means you need to kind of adopt certain SDKs or mm-hmm. things in your code base to update or to make things work for tracing and things like that. And there's probably really good use cases why that still is the case. But I really like the idea that eBPF and something built on it can sort of be dropped in place and mm-hmm. kind of look at those syscalls happening at the kernel level and without a lot of change at all to any application already running on the system, right? That is super valuable. I think when talking about sort of your ROI and your time to value of adopting new technology, being able to not change a whole stack of things to make a new thing work is super, super valuable.
No, it helps me tie our conversation that we had with Timescale DB and around observability mm-hmm. and how, like, when you're adopting that solution, you do need to make a few changes, add a sidecar mm-hmm. container, whereas this is a different approach of doing things and how, as you said, you can just drop it in without drastically or even like changing your code by a small percentage, which can be a lot, which can be tedious and time consuming and can just push back those dates for adoption. So this is great.
Exactly. And that being said, I'm sure there's use cases for both, you know, given that, you know, this is really at the kernel level. So if it's not talking to the kernel, then you really don't know about it. So having, you know, tracing happening within the application within mm-hmm. Certain languages, probably still a whole slew of use cases that are super valid there. But yeah, really cool technology. Mm-hmm. The other thing, because I'm a newbie, the be careful statement around you can really mess things up, it caught my eye and it makes sense to me, right? So if you can kind of write programs that do something when there's something else happening at the kernel level and you're gonna, you know, make it wait to do something, you know, unique, then, you know, you could definitely, you know, tie down the performance if that thing is, you know, really cumbersome in terms of what it's trying to do. And I could easily see how it could affect the whole performance of the system. So I'm sure that that's something I would do probably when exploring this technology the first time. But I also really like, you know, how Matt was super open about getting involved and really just kind of digging in and getting your hands dirty with eBPF as well. So really exciting stuff. We'll include all the links that Matt mm-hmm. talked about in the show notes, yep. as well as some news links as well.
And like, this is not like a takeaway from the discussion, that just an interesting point that he made, right? Like, employees are actually using the Kubernetes clusters and running crypto miners and making some money on the side. I was like, my mind was blown. I was like, wow, people are just going crazy now.
Don't do that. Yeah. That's our message from Kubernetes Bytes, is don't do that to your employers. Anyway. All right. You know the drill. Please review Kubernetes Bytes on wherever you can review your podcast. Share it with your friends and let us know what you like, what you don't like. Please give us that feedback. It's super important for us. And in a couple of weeks, we are having DataStax on the show, which is really exciting to talk about Cassandra and some stuff they're doing around multi-cloud. Really, really excited about that episode. So stay tuned for that. And that brings us to the end of today's episode. I'm Ryan.
I'm Bobbin.
And thanks for joining another episode of Kubernetes Bytes.
Thank you for listening to the Kubernetes Bytes podcast.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.